Hello, I'm Mark Stein, and welcome back. That was the voice of Kathleen Battle. This is her birthday today. I'll remind you that support for WEAA is provided in part by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information available at 866-4-GLASS-1. Right now, we're talking once again to Edward Wyckoff Williams, author, columnist, contributing editor of The Root, about a couple of things. One thing he's writing and one thing he's written. And Edward, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you. And let me say that I will be sending in my donation to WEAA.
Thank you, brother. Thank you very much. They will love to hear that. Good. So join Edward and go to WEAA.org and make your contribution. But let me focus in here on the piece you wrote about why the right cheers Zimmerman's verdict. Someone said to me that what you wrote was why white people cheered, but no, you didn't say that. You said why the rights. Let's be very clear about that.
So. Yeah. It was really sad because you saw people like Ted Nugent and Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh, as they normally do, which is to rally the sort of old-style KKK factions within the Republican Party. And I think that in light of the fact that the verdict, as we were so demoralized, and you and I have discussed this so many times, basically took us back to 1955 with Emmett Till and saw that a mostly white jury still could not give justice to a black child, I think that it was all the more sad to have that perspective then validated by the voices that are so loud and dominant within the Republican Party. There's a real split in this country. And essentially what we are seeing in the age of Obama and in light of the ascendance of President Barack Obama to the highest office in the land is there is a redemption era style attitude within the Republican Party that seeks to take us back to sort of the 1870s, you know, to the Black Code where black boys had no rights with which a white man had to respect. This is just a really, really sad occurrence. But I think that it requires a history lesson for people to even see it that way. And so that's a part of what I was trying to do, not just to sort of stoke racial anxieties and sort of point out the most extreme voices, but to also inform people that this has happened before.
And one of the things this is a much deeper issue than just these just kind of right wing bloggers and talk show hosts. And folks, you can join us here 410-319-8888 because I was reading a book. We haven't reviewed the book on air yet, but we will soon, by a historian whose name is Carol Emberton, E-M-B-E-R-T-O-N. Her book is called Beyond Redemption. And her book focuses on the period after the Civil War and during Reconstruction. What she focuses on is the role of violence and hatred has played in the history of the United States and the role it played in that period.
Yes. That's such an important period. And what I have been working on is something called White Redemption 2.0. A lot of people think that we went straight from slavery to Jim Crow, and they don't understand that the period in between is what historians call the Redemption Era, where white Southerners, who at the time were mostly Democrats, right, but have now sort of morphed into the Republican Party, that they literally sought to redeem the power that they had over black people. And that was largely through violence and also through the suppression of the voting franchise. And so if you look at what's happening today with the Voting Rights Act basically being gutted by the U.S. Supreme Court and voter suppression efforts mostly throughout the former Confederate states, but mostly in every state that Republicans have a majority in the state houses, you see the same kind of tactics being used that was used in the Redemption Era. And then when that's coupled, Mark, by the kind of violence that we see against black males in particular in this country, by police mostly, but also by sort of vigilantes like a George Zimmerman, we see that this, and the violence, I think, in our political rhetoric against this African-American president, all of that sort of, I think, grows out of the kind of racial anxieties and racial fears of white people losing power. And so this is, I think, a historical thing that we need to talk about in order to not repeat it.
You know, it was interesting. We had a commentary on the show earlier in the week, last week, I should say, from a Native American writer from the Rosebud Sioux Reservation. And one of the things he was saying was that, that Native Americans across the across America relate and support to what happened to Trayvon Martin and support Trayvon Martin's family, and started talking about how many Native Americans are afraid to leave their border towns, to leave their reservations where they live, to go to the border towns because there have been many unsolved murders, which he listed a number, of young Native American men killed, even a five white men taken to court for murdering this young Native American man, but were released.
Yeah.
And that stuff never gets to the press.
And that stuff never gets to the press. And I think that we almost touched on these issues of violence by whites on Native Americans when I think earlier this year or late last year, there was the debate over the Violence Against Women's Act. And one of the things that the Republicans refused to pass on was covering, allowing that act, allowing the Violence Against Women's Act to cover Native American women living on reservations, because of a real epidemic in this country, which is under-discussed and undercovered, and I hope you will do more on this, is the fact that a lot of the domestic violence that occurs is against Native American women by white men on reservations, because they essentially have some sort of de facto impunity. Like you can't the police on those reservations can't arrest them or something. It's, I don't really understand the laws there, but I think that's completely outrageous. And so if that is then also being juxtaposed by sort of actual gun violence, right, against Native Americans, there's a real problem here. There's a deep-seated racial hatred against black and brown bodies, which is at the heart of the American at the heart of the American story, really. And I think that, yes, we've come very far. And I want to celebrate all of the progress that has been made, particularly in the age of Obama. But the truth of the matter is that there are people who would still rather take us back to the days where we literally were living with a three-fifths compromise. And that is something that I will not stand for. And it is something that I will talk about. It's something that you talk about. And it's something that we need to all educate ourselves on.
So tell me, I'm curious. I know you're working on this piece on the stop, what happened with Stop and Frisk. But I'm curious.
I'm actually interviewing Bill de Blasio. You're going to love this in particular, just because of who you are and what you represent for so many of us. So Bill de Blasio is a New York public advocate, white American, Democrat, and he is married to an African-American woman and has a son who literally could look like Trayvon. And the son did an ad for his father in the run-up to what is tonight the first debate among the the Democratic primary for the election, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the ad, you see the son with this massive afro, and they're walking down the street, and he's just talking about his dad. And so in light of the decision in the federal court in the case of Floyd versus the city of New York, which was the case that challenged the stop and frisk policy on the basis that it violated constitutional protections for black and brown people, the judge ruled on that yesterday. I'm going to be talking to him at about noon today about that, and I just thought that it would be a wonderful perspective to get that we hardly get. You and I have talked about this extensively. You've had on black mothers and black fathers who talk about this so passionately, and I think that that's important. I think that it's really interesting to hear a white father in America talk about his black son and living in New York, and what it would mean as the mayor of that city to, one, have the responsibility to police it correctly, but also do it in such a way that does not encourage not just racial profiling, but racial violence against black boys by the NYPD.
Edward Wyckoff Williams, we're going to continue this on a longer basis. I always appreciate everything you write and your willingness to come on the show and talk to our listeners.
You're a star.
So are you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, buddy.
Thank you, brother. We'll talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
And we will be linking to his work on our website, steinershow.org.